Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to episode 188 of Geek Town Radio. I'm back this week with Gray. How are you doing?
Happy New Year, Dave.
Happy New Year. How are you doing?
I am very good, thank you.
Good, good, good. What have you been up to since last year, I guess?
Christmas catch-ups, obviously. Time to do a big catch-up. I was a bit thwarted by technology problems. I lost my Sky.
Oh, no.
Two weekends during the Christmas break, so I just went on to Netflix for those 2 weekends while I waited for all the repairs. So I had a real good time to catch up with a lot of things I hadn't sort of finished. So I had a real time of Christmas catch-ups. I watched a few really old things, like back in the lists of shows I'd been wanting to watch for ages, and I watched a few new things as well. So that was quite good. So being that time on Netflix meant that I got to experience very quickly, within the first couple of days of release, Bandersnatch.
Yes, yes.
Yes.
What did you think?
Since watching it, I've read so much more about it. The thing I enjoyed the most about it was that I watched it with a friend, and I think that made my evening, because we were both playing off each other about what decisions we'd made, and sort of like, you make the decision this time, and like, we talked it over. I just think it's a very different experience to if I'd sat on my own and watched it in a room.
Yeah.
And I've been on the train on the way to work, and I've seen like a commuter next to me playing it on his own with his headphones in. And I just think, actually, you can have a very different experience depending on your environment.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed the concept. I can see now it's going through lots of dramas. People are saying they weren't happy with some of the actors. They were saying it was all formulaic. But I thought, you know what? Well done, Netflix. You put on something really good. It grabbed people's attention. Since then, I've read something about it actually not being a Black Mirror concept, but it was like Netflix wanted this for a while. So they went out to Charlie Brooker and said, do you think you could write us something with Black Mirror as the title?
Right.
I don't know how true that is. Don't know if that changes.
I mean, I don't know if that's true or not, but if it isn't, it certainly came across as very Black Mirror. it was a very Black Mirror concept. So
yeah, so I really enjoyed it, and I think I enjoyed it more because I was watching it with someone.
Yeah.
I also watched quite a few films over the Christmas break. I went and shut myself in the cinema for a day, but I also watched Bird Box.
Good.
So not to be outdone by my parents, who are in their 60s. We went out for a New Year's Day walk, and they just turned around casually to me and went, oh, we downloaded that Netflix thing and we watched Bird Box. So I was like, I can't be behind my parents on this. So the next day I was watching Bird Box. Again, I watched it before watching all some of the critique behind it. I appreciate it for a Netflix film. I think, it's really good cast, really good idea. Obviously now, retrospectively, I'm looking at some of the flaws, but ultimately they've got a good entertainment, something everyone's going to talk about, and ultimately that's what Netflix want. And I think, well done, Netflix. Did you watch it, Dave?
I haven't, no. I haven't seen it. I have seen some sort of negative things about it. Matt, who has watched it, sort of his opinion was, it's basically The Quiet Place, but The Quiet Place is a lot better.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen either of those films, so I couldn't tell you either way, but I'm horribly behind on my movie watching. But yeah, I mean, it's maybe one that I will go and watch, but I need to see The Quiet Place first anyway. That's one that I need to catch up with, so I don't know. It's on Netflix. It's not like it's going anywhere because it's a Netflix original, so I can watch it anytime. So I might go.
Exactly. And then, my day in the cinema consisted of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
That's been very positively received. Yeah. So what did you think?
Rocketed straight into my top five movies of 2018 by far.
Wow.
I was very thoroughly impressed by that. Holmes and Watson. I don't really want to talk about that. I'm just going to move on.
That mad. Wow.
I had a 10-minute nap.
Oh, dear.
And me and my friend had already had a backup plan in case he walked out. But I just think we got to a point where we're like, I'm just going to see this travesty for what it is.
Dear.
And then Mary Poppins at the end. And I really enjoyed that. That was a lovely little throwback. We, both of us, obviously, we were in our 30s, so we considered the songs aren't as memorable. But, you know, the original had 60 years to get the songs into our heads.
Exactly.
And make us remember it. This one's only just come out. And actually, the more and more I think about it, some of the songs like Trip a Little Light, Fantastic, you know, it's there. It's in the back of my head. If I watched it a couple more times, I think I'd be out there singing in that song. So I was very, very, very pleased with that.
Good.
A couple of other things I've been watching. So I don't know why I started watching it. It's complete, like, sort of trashy TV, guilty pleasure television.
Yes, it is.
But just on the way home today, I think I'm up to episode 8 now. So I don't know why I'm watching it. It's not where I would normally be watching.
I think I described it last week as Dexter, as done by the CW. Yeah. It's fun. It's entertaining. It's from the Berlanti side of things, which is why it feels like a CW thing. It's from Berlanti and Greg Berlanti, and who does all the CW shows and does Riverdale and that sort of stuff. I actually really enjoyed it. I thought it was really fun. And, you know, dark and like silly and twisted and great job.
Don't get me wrong, Dave. I'll be finishing those last two episodes before the week's out. I'm there. And I've been keeping up with The Good Place. I think it's actually taken a turn. It's getting better. and I'm really pleased. The Goldbergs is back. A couple of other things. I finished Sabrina. I finished some ITV dramas, which I had stacked up, including Innocent with Hermione Norris,
cool.
Which was back earlier in the year. I had some really good time, really binging.
Yes.
The last thing I thought I'd talk about is the BAFTA nominations, which came out recently.
Yes.
And consider some of the films I probably need to put into my to-view list over the next few weeks. The favourite was already there. I definitely want to go and see that. That's obviously walked away with the most nominations. That's nominated for 12. And I'm really hoping Olivia Colman takes her award. I think she really thoroughly deserves it, even from the trailers that I'm seeing and the clips and the interview footage you see on television shows. Olivia Colman has got, I think, to take that BAFTA.
Yeah.
I'm sort of gunning for her. Other nominations, so Bohemian Rhapsody came away with 7, as did First Man, Roma, and A Star Is Born. And then 6 nominations went to Vice and 5 nominations went to BlacKkKlansman. I love BlacKkKlansman. I really did enjoy that. That was in my top 10 films of the year. So they came out. I'm really excited about those. I will definitely be tuning in to watch that. And I'm just going to do a little bit of a guess. I don't know if you want to have a little bit of a bet on me. So the best films are it's either going to be BlacKkKlansman, The Favourite, Green Book, Roma, or A Star Is Born for best film. I think Star Is Born is going to get that.
Yeah, possibly. The problem is I've not seen many of these, so I honestly don't know. I've heard quite a lot about Green Book, and we've interviewed half the people behind the scenes behind it, so I'm sort of gunning for that winning.
Okay. And then I was going to have a little bet on Outstanding British Film, because I think if A Star Is Born wins the best film, I think the outstanding British film is going to go to The Favourite, and that's up against Beast, Bohemian Rhapsody, McQueen, Stan and Ollie, and You Were Never Really Here. So those are my little bets. I'm going to put it out there if anyone on Geek Town wants to talk to me on Twitter about what they think, or even talk about any of the other categories. Then obviously do follow me at Grey the Geek. So, and I will respond.
awesome. So yeah, I mean, my stuff this week, Titans, of course, came out on Netflix, which is the DC show we've been talking about, it seems like forever. So that came out. Again, it's a show from Greg Berlanti. It's not in any way, shape or form connected to the CW DC shows. If you're expecting it to be anything like that, it's not. It's very, very dark. It's very, very dark, and much more in the vein of them trying to do something like Daredevil compared to the other Marvel shows like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, it's that sort of different balance to it. I would say Daredevil's probably a better show. Titans is, it is a little bit messy. The plotting's a little bit all over the place. It's got that same issue that I had with things like the first season of Daredevil, actually, where they're not in costume anywhere near enough. It's got the same issue that the Runaways had for the first season, in that, you know, the show's called Titans, but the entire season is about them meeting and kind of building that team, rather than them actually being Titans and being superhero-y. So that is a little bit annoying. And it does jump around quite a lot, you know, and I get that they're trying to do background on things, but I don't know, there's something that seems a little disjointed about the story. So I think it's good, and I think it's interesting. It's one of those things that I think could have a great second season, but I think there's been a few hiccups in the first season that need knocking off, those edges need knocking off to get it to work properly. I haven't got quite to the end of it yet. I think I'm on episode 8, so I've got a couple to go. But
yeah. I watched one episode this morning on my way into work, knowing that we were going to talk about it, just to see if I could get a feel of it. And I did feel the same about the Daredevil, like the opening scene that you have with Grayson and the people in the alley. And I thought, oh yeah, it's a little bit Daredevil. But yeah, I felt the same. I've almost wanted them to be in these costumes. And in my head, I thought, why don't they do an opening episode where they're together and then use some later episodes in the season to talk about their story about how they came together, because I want it to be there rather than having to wait to get there.
I mean, a lot of the first season is focused really around Rachel and who Rachel is, and I mean, I don't think it's any spoiler to say that Rachel is Raven, because I mean, we know that from all the publicity, you know, that she is the character that is known as Raven in the comic books, but she's referred to as Rachel throughout most of the show. Almost the entire season is around her story. So I don't know. I don't know whether that was the right thing to do. It doesn't quite work and hold together properly for me, but I am enjoying it. I haven't been kind of sat half watching, half on my phone, which I have with being some other superhero shows. So, you know, I'm hoping that they manage to sort some of the issues out with it for the second season, assuming it comes back for another season, but I suspect it will.
It probably will be renewed, won't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So there's that. Charmed, that appeared on E4 last week as well. This is the new version of Charmed, and I've watched, I think, probably every episode of the old version. So, I mean, it's a show that I knew historically quite well. I quite like it. It's fun. It's very CW again. It's very kind of teen-led. It's going to upset fans of the original because it's not the original cast. It's an entirely new sort of setup and story, but I think it's fine. It's Charmed for a new generation that maybe haven't seen the original. So yeah, it's fine. It's a perfectly good witch-based kind of CW type show, you know?
Yeah, I heard a slating review. I mean, I'm starting to think I need to stay away from the reviews before I go and watch things, but yeah, I heard an absolute slating one. It came from people who are absolutely diehard in love with the original.
You're never going to get into it if you're a huge...
Yeah. So... A lot of people were sort of saying it was just a tamer, softer version of something like Buffy or Sabrina.
Yeah, that is probably a fair assessment of it. But I mean, it's fun enough and it's certainly watchable. You got to bear in mind, as I say, where it comes from. It sits in that pantheon of shows that are on the CW in the US, and it sits very well in that kind of teen area. You know, I think it's perfectly fine for that sort of audience. And it's not one of my favorite shows by any stretch of the imagination, but it was perfectly okay, I thought. So, yeah. And I will probably watch some more episodes of it and see how it goes. It doesn't quite have the charm of the original.
I get that. Yeah. Charm.
but you know, I think it's perfectly okay. I will watch some more, and because I don't like judging things on just one episode. So I will watch some more and see. The Orville also came back this week, which I absolutely adored the first season of that. I thought it was brilliant. The second season continues that sort of comedy Star Trek vibe to it, does it very well. The opening episode is, you know how in things like Star Trek, they might have one of the officers go back to a planet because there's something that happens every year and they have to celebrate it, or you know, like there's a sort of mating ritual, which was always the thing that they did with Vulcans, the Ponfar ritual. With this, it was the first officer needing to pee because they pee once a year. and that was the basis for sort of why they were going back to the planet. I love the fact that it takes things that are sort of established sci-fi sort of tropey things and subverts them in that sort of way. I rather like that. But it's well written. It's funny. It's got some good relationship stuff in there with the two leads. I thoroughly enjoyed watching that. It's well worth going back to. A couple of trailers popped up this week as well. One for a show which had been completely off my radar until the trailer popped up, called Hannah, which is coming to Amazon Prime. And this appears to be about a teen assassin, but it's an interesting one if you're a fan of The Killing, because it's got the two stars of The Killing in. It's got Joel Kinnaman and Mirella Enos. There's a girl called Esme Creed Miller who plays the young girl who is this sort of teen assassin. Joel Kinnaman plays her father, and Mirella Enos is playing a CIA agent who is chasing after them. So it's not going to have that same sort of buddy vibe that they're most definitely on opposite sides in this. But it's described as a equal parts high concept thriller and coming of age drama, which follows the journey of an extraordinary young girl raised in a forest as she evades the relentless pursuit of an off-book CIA agent and tries to unearth the truth behind who she is. It's based on David Farr's 2011 movie of the same name. So kind of sounds sort of interesting as a possibility.
Heard great things about the film when it was released. I never got around to seeing it. So when I saw that, I thought, oh, the film must have enough meat to make it into a full series.
So that's coming. We don't have an exact date for it, but it's coming March, that onto Amazon Prime. So one to watch out for, I think, could be kind of interesting. The other one was again, something which I completely missed up until the trailer came out. I don't know whether they'd released anything earlier, but I certainly hadn't heard about it. It's a comedy called Russian Doll. It's from Natasha Lyon, who you will know from Orange is the New Black. It's her, it's Amy Poehler, and Leslie Headland are the three people behind it. And it's kind of a ground Hoggest day of this young woman named Nadia, played by Natasha Lyon, and she's the guest of honor at this seemingly unescapable party one night in New York City. She sort of starts off on this night, I think ends up dying, and then wakes up again, and he's stuck in this sort of loop of this party, this one night party. And it's a series, which is going to be interesting. So it's got that kind of The Good Place, off the wall weirdness factor to it, which sounds kind of like it could be quite interesting. Natasha Lyon plays Nikki in Orange is the New Black, so that's where you'll know her from. It's got various people in from like Captain Phillips and Ocean's 8 and Chicago Fire, so there's quite a good bunch of people surrounding her. She's been involved in the writing of this, by the sounds of it. It was co-created by Lyon, Amy Conger, and Leslie Headland, who did The Bachelorette and Terriers. So kind of interesting, but that's coming out on the 1st of February on Netflix. Netflix, and it's called The Russian Doll. So, yes, I would advise you to go watch that. Certainly give it a chance. It looks very interesting, that one.
There's so much coming out.
I know. I mean, there's even more stuff popped up like today as well. So that's all the stuff we've been doing. We'll next move on to that more stuff coming up on the TV and film news. TV and film news this week. We start off with the cancellations, renewals and pickups. Something going away to start off with. Criminal Minds is ending with a 10-episode 15th season. I know there was a lot of people, particularly on Facebook, that were very upset this was finishing. But, I mean, you can't really complain too much. It's made it to 15 seasons.
That's a good run.
that's a pretty solid run. It's certainly in the top 20 longest-running American TV shows of all time. So... Mm. And I think it's like number four in the top five of live action TV shows running in the US right now. So it's had a pretty fairly decent run, I would say. So yes, that will be going away, but there's plenty of other procedural things out there, you know. Yeah. So there's that. New Amsterdam, which is that medical drama starring Ryan Eggold from The Blacklist, that's coming to Amazon Prime. On the 8th of February, it's launching. We'll have all the aired episodes coming on the 8th of February, and then the following episodes for season one will come out every Wednesday after that. It's an interesting one for Amazon Prime to pick up that, because it is kind of a procedurally medical drama, and that's not really the sort of thing that Amazon Prime usually goes for, but that's fine, as long as it's airing somewhere in the UK. I like the actor, so we'll have to see what it's like. Yeah. But that was good. Big announcement last night as part of the launch of True Detective, which of course came out 2 a.m. It premiered over here and over there because they simulcast it. But they also announced that Game of Thrones is coming on the 15th of April for its final season. That will simulcast at 2 a.m. with the US like it has done in previous seasons. Final six episodes, although most people that have knowledge of this are saying that those six episodes are basically six movies. So they're longer form. They've gone all out. I suspect they didn't drop the budget. They just dropped the episode number and made the episode longer. That is looking like it's going to be a very, very interesting and impressive final season. And then the other big news that landed today, Channel 4 has signed a deal to bring the entire Adult Swim back catalogue and future stuff, plus season 4 of the hotly anticipated season 4 of Rick and Morty are going to be exclusively on All 4 and Channel 4 in the UK. So Rick and Morty had previously been on Netflix, but...
Yeah. Did it not go off for a while, and I saw it this week back on Netflix. Yeah. Was there something that took them all off? And then I looked this week and it was inviting me to watch season 3 again. And I was like, but I thought it left Netflix.
Yeah, I thought it did, and then it came back on again. So I'm not entirely sure what's going on with that. I don't know what's going to go on moving forward with that as well. Channel 4 are saying that the full season will be exclusively airing on Channel 4, though, and then we'll go on to All 4 afterwards. Mm. What excites me about this, though, is the fact that they've picked up the rest of that catalogue from Adult Swim, which is the sort of not only cartoons, but it's this sort of sub-brand of the Cartoon Network, I think it was. But they've actually creating a channel on All 4 for all these shows to sit on. One of the things that's coming with that is Robot Chicken, and I adore Robot Chicken. That's the Seth Green and Matthew Centric's wonderfully strange kind of rip-off of various different pop culture references, and it's done with all stop motion animation. So they've done ones that are based around DC characters. They've got one which is a Walking Dead special, which is actually going to air on E4 as well. So that's going out. They've got the Robot Chicken Walking Dead special, but all of this stuff is going to be on a special channel on All 4 as well, along with a load of other Adult Swim shows like The Ventura Brothers, The Eric Andre Show, mostly for millennials, Mr. Pickles, Aqua Teen Hunger Force, Tim and Eric's Bedtime Stories. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of shows.
Loads,
so
yeah.
There's loads, loads more, and they're going to be adding to it throughout the year as well. So there's absolutely tons of stuff that's going to be coming onto there. I'm just very happy that particularly Robot Chicken, but the whole thing has got like a home, because Robot Chicken's kind of popped up on, I think Fox ran it for a bit and then it didn't, and there was a bunch of specials like the Walking Dead special came out and then nobody aired them over here. I don't think the DC Comics ones aired over here. They aired the Star Wars ones, and the Star Wars ones, if you've not seen them and if you're a fan of Star Wars, are one of the funniest things I've ever seen. So it's well worth going to watch, but I'm very, very happy that that seems to have like a settled home in the UK now. All that to watch out for. They haven't said exactly when those are going to land, but it's coming soon to All 4 and Channel 4 and E4 for those. Moving on to other news, there is a bit of a Star Trek update, because there was a whole load of different Star Trek news that dropped this week. Stuff about the Picard series and the movies franchise and some other shows as well. The Picard series, which we knew has been coming for a while, they've given a little bit more detail about it. It's going to be set, obviously, in the Next Generation timeline. It's going to be set post the events of the 2009 movie, which is when they booted the alternative timeline that had Chris Pine in it and all that stuff. Just to try to explain this for those people that haven't been following it, like you.
I knew you were going to say that.
what basically happened in the 2009 movie is, rather than just rebooting it completely, what they did was they actually picked a point in the Next Generation timeline and had Spock from that timeline go back in time and alter history to create this secondary timeline. And the secondary timeline is the one that the movies have been following when they rebooted it from the 2009. So the last three movies have followed that alternative timeline. But the original timeline that everything else has been based in, like the original Star Trek and Next Generation and Voyager and all that stuff, that still exists. So it's going to be continuing in that original timeline, not the alternative movie timeline. So there's that. It's also going to be continuing from the events that happened in that movie, because in that movie, the thing with Spock going back in time was caused by the explosion of the Romulan homeworld, and Romulus being destroyed has dramatically altered Picard's life, because he was involved in sort of trying to get the Romulans reunited with other races and stuff. So that's the basic sort of background to it, and the premise for it is it's going to involve a certain amount of stuff with the Romulans and Picard dealing with the fallout of that event and the disappearance of older Spock into this other timeline, because of course he vanished from that timeline. So that's what that's coming. We still don't know exactly when that is going to come, but I'm very much looking forward to that. We know there is another animated series coming, which is called Star Trek Lower Decks, which is an animated comedy series about a minor ship in the fleet. And it's about the people that kind of do the engineering work and that sort of stuff. So we know that one's coming, but they've also said that there is now at least one other animated series in the works. We don't know anything about it other than they have said that they are trying to make all the animated series slightly different, with different animation styles and stuff. So it may be that one is a sort of computer-generated thing, it may be one's a hand-drawn thing, it may be that one is comedy like Lower Decks, another one might be a straight drama. So we don't know, but there is another animated thing in the works, apparently. Over on the movie side, things aren't looking quite so good, because what was supposed to be the fourth outing for the rebooted Star Trek franchise seems to have stalled. There were reports a while ago that Chris Pine, who played Kirk, wasn't going to come back due to contractual issues. They'd had arguments about money, I think. Chris Hemsworth was also supposed to be reprising his role as Kirk's father in that movie. They couldn't get him back because of contractual issues. S.J. Clarkson, who was originally hired to be the first female director of that fourth movie, is now going to be helming the Game of Thrones prequels. The reason that she's available for that is because Paramount have shelved the fourth film for now. So, don't expect to see it back on the big screen. But you're not exactly going to be short of things Star Trek-wise on the small screen for, I mean, there's Discovery coming back, which is back on the 18th of January. They've also said today that there is a Discovery spin-off series starring Michelle Yeoh that is definitely in development. So there's that potentially coming. There's a Star Trek Academy series from Josh Schwartz and Stephanie Savage, who are the people behind Runaways than Gossip Girl. So that's going to be a younger skewed one. They've got that in development. There's Lower Decks, as I said. There's the Picard series. They're basically planning on having something on CBS All Access in America, like Star Trek related, pretty much every single season throughout the year. So there will always be something Star Trek related on there. You're not going to be short of things, despite the fact that it doesn't look like it's coming back to the cinema anytime soon.
Oh, my head hurts. Yes. I'm sort of glad I'm not a Trekkie. I don't think I could have managed all of those. That's just so many. But, you know, someone is really making their money out of the franchise, aren't they? And really, yeah.
Yes, they are not letting go of that franchise anytime soon.
And I think there's an audience. That's the thing. I think they're all going to be received. And unfortunately, you're going to have a lot of picky people who are going to really pick apart that timeline stuff you're talking about.
I'm sure.
I don't even know it. And I'm already imagining the blogs and things like that and the people, questioning certain elements, but this can't have happened because of that.
I'm looking forward to all that sort of stuff coming out. It should be really good. Moving on to other things, Netflix are adapting a couple of novels, or it's sort of a novel series. Shadow and Bone and Six of Crows are the I think they're described as the Grishaverse novel series from Lee Bardugh or Bardugh. He's got this Grishaverse novel series based around Shadow and Bone and Six of Crows. The synopsis for the story says, in a world cleaved in two by a massive barrier of perpetual darkness, where a natural creature feasts on human flesh, a young soldier uncovers a power that might finally unite her country. But as she struggles to hone her power, dangerous forces plot against her. Thugs, thieves, assassins, and saints are at war now, and it will take more than magic to survive. It doesn't really give away a huge amount, but the new drama is going to be released. They're basically taking that whole Grishaverse thing and squashing it into one TV series. It's going to be called Shadow and Bone. Eric Hazira, who was the man behind Bird Box and Arrival, he's going to be adapting the novels and serve as showrunner on the series. It's going to bring characters from both the Shadow and Bone and Six of Crows overlapping series together. So how they're going to do that, I'm sure that will upset some people that are massive fans of the book series, I'm fairly sure. But so we'll have to wait and see. I think that sounds like it could be kind of interesting. The books have sold over 2.5 million copies in English language alone and have been translated into 38 languages around the globe and counting. New installment called The King of Scars is due out later in the month. Yeah, not books that I know particularly, but yeah, if you're a fan of them, that's going to be one I'm sure you're going to very much be looking forward to. Earliest you're likely to see it is, well, it could be later this year, but I rather suspect you're going to be 2020 at least, I would have thought. It's going to be 8 episodes long, that first series. They seem to have started to kind of, they went started at sort of 14 episodes, they've now kind of, or 16, they're now sort of, then 12, and then 10, and they seem to be going down to 8 episode runs now, so on Netflix.
I think they're learning from the Marvel situation where they were making 13 and it was just dragging out series, and now the better series seem to be 10 or under.
Yeah.
They're sort of properly getting the story told in a better way, rather than trying to fulfill a criteria by the US system where there was like, you know, huge amounts of numbers. So
yeah, definitely. I mean, I think 8 episodes, if you can do it in 8 episodes, do it in 8 episodes. Don't string it out to 13. I think that was one of the problems with the Marvel series, is there was always the feeling with those that you could take a few episodes out of that and you would have been absolutely fine. So 10 episode runs I think work perfectly well.
Definitely.
Over on Sky One, they have picked up a sci-fi comedy, or sci-fi-esque comedy, called Code 404. Stars Stephen Graham and Daniel Mays, who are both fabulous actors, so I'm very, very into this. So it's called Code 404. It's a sort of sci-fi-esque police comedy set in the near future and revolves around two detective inspectors called D.I. John Major, which is played by Daniel Mays, and D.I. Roy Carver, played by Stephen Graham. They're the top crime-fighting duo in the unit, but when an undercover sting goes horribly wrong, Major is gunned down on the job and killed. As an asset considered too valuable to lose. Major's body is then fast-tracked into an experimental artificial intelligence project to bring him back from the dead. The only problem is Major 2.0 may look and sound like the original, but something has been lost in translation quite literally. His arrogant demeanor and gung-ho approach remain, but his crime-fighting instincts have completely deserted him. Somehow Major's error-strewn hunches and Carver's scrambling to make good allows them just about to scrape by. But while the experiment might be hailed as success on the front line, Roy Carver is left dealing with the increasingly deluded partner. So I think this, as a duo, I mean, Stephen Graham's fabulous and Daniel Mays is great as well. So that seems like the perfect sort of roles for them, I think. I think this sounds really, really interesting. It's been written by Daniel Peake, who wrote episodes of Horrible Histories, Not Going Out and Mongrels. Been directed by Al Campbell, who has been director on things like Bad Education and Man Down. So that's the team behind it. It's got a fairly good team, I think.
Yeah, I like both actors. I've got a feeling I might be wrong. People correct me. Stephen Graham's about to be in the next Line of Duty. So both of them have got a Line of Duty connection.
Yes, that's true, actually. Yes, I think that's right.
So I think that's going to be quite good to see them both in a comedy. The directors and the writers are both sort of very slapstick, obvious humours. They're not necessarily the subtle, dry humours that are quite on the TV channels at the moment. So this could be a proper silly slapstick type humour coming back. You know, it might be quite good. But I think Sky are putting good money behind sort of comedies at the moment. I'm thinking of the Jack Whitehall one from last year.
Yes, yeah. Bounty Hunters,
which was really, really good. And I thought, they've lost Trolleyed, and I thought Trolleyed was always a good,
solid comedy.
So this could potentially be very good.
Yeah, they are beginning filming in March this year, so it's going to be 2020 before they actually release it, I think. But yes, beyond Sky One and Now TV in 2020. So that's one to watch out for. That's all the news we have for this week. Next up, we have an interview.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The interview this week is with the VFX supervisor for Mary Poppins Returns, which I still haven't seen, so I'm rather glad you had. Matt Johnson is his name. It's Mary Poppins Returns, of course, is the follow-up to the classic 1964 movie directed by Rob Marshall. Matt has the interesting job of basically trying to recreate the magic of the first film, but for a modern audience. So we discuss a little bit about how he landed the role and how his reaction when he first got told, we're doing a new version of Mary Poppins. We want you to do all the magical stuff for it. It's like, oh, yeah. So, yes, talk a bit about that and some of the key scenes in the film as well. As I said to him at the time, I hadn't actually managed to see it yet because we actually did this interview just before Christmas, literally just as the film was coming out. And then me being me, haven't managed to get to the cinema, so I still haven't managed to see it. But the stuff out in the trailers though, so there's nothing too spoilery in here. It's literally him talking about sort of the mechanics of certain scenes and how things worked, and a lot of that stuff was shown in the trailers, so don't worry too much about that. His other work, he's worked on X-Men First Class and World War Z and Into the Woods and a whole bunch of other things he's worked on as well. Here he is talking about Mary Poppins Returns. It's Matt Johnson. We will see you afterwards with some highlights for next week on TV. It's lovely to have you on. You're my last interview of the year.
I feel honoured. Thank you.
We've spoken to a few VFX people before, but I'm not sure whether we've spoken to somebody in particularly a VFX supervisor. So Maybe the first thing we should do is start off by just getting to you explain exactly what your job role is.
Yes, I guess my job is a visual effects supervisor, which sounds very complicated, but basically, certainly on a film like Mary Poppins, it tends to be anything that's impossible or anything that you can't do for real, they tend to turn to me and go, well, how are we going to do that then? So I would be in charge of designing the methodology about how we would film something that can't happen, like people flying through the air or dancing with penguins. So that would be my initial job, to work it out. And then on set, I guess I'm sort of responsible for making sure that we sort of have the right shooting methodology, that we get what we need to get to get the shot completed successfully. And often they'll send me out with a little crew and a camera and I'll go off and shoot my own stuff. And then in post-production, I guess I'm creatively in charge of putting all the things together. So, I mean, I'm sure our listeners will be familiar with things like green screen and CGI and miniatures and all that. I mean, basically, yeah, that falls under the category of visual effects.
Okay, cool. There's various sort of visual effects houses that work on different bits depending what their specialties are and how much work there is and that sort of stuff.
Exactly. Well, the way it works, I mean, and it varies from movie to movie, but essentially I'm overall, I don't work for a house anymore. I used to many years ago, but I'm sort of freelance. So I guess I'm the overall in charge person, I guess, if you want to call it that. And then along with my producer here on the case of Mary Poppins was Leslie Lerman, we would then assign the work to a variety of different houses, and we could have, I don't know, 600 people working on the movie at sort of different houses across sort of around the world working on the show. So we end up at the end, certainly on a big visual effects movie like Mary Poppins, actually being probably numerically the biggest department on a feature film.
Yeah. I mean, it's an amazing project to be involved with as well. I mean, apart from the fact that there's a spectacular cast on it, I mean, it's a continuation of the Mary Poppins story. What first goes through your mind when they come to you and sort of say, we're making a Mary Poppins sequel, we want you to do all the visual effects for it?
I'll refrain from swearing, which is what I think I probably did in my head when I did it, but it's certainly the, oh golly, would be the polite way of, of saying it. There you go. It's a challenge, because I think the first Mary Poppins film is a part of many people's kind of childhood memories, certainly of mine. And I think it's a movie that we've all sort of grown up with. And it's kind of part of the kind of the cultural zeitgeist, I guess.
Yeah.
And knowing that movie was sort of renowned for its visual effects. They won the Oscar back in 1964. And Peter Ellenshaw and his original team have gone down in sort of a visual effects folklore, the what they did, and then sort of the Jolly Holiday dancing with penguins and all of that. So it's just a part of how we've all grown up. So certainly that was in the back of my mind when you kind of think about, okay, well, we need to kind of do that. So that was a challenge. But then also it was, I think, the good thing about it was we weren't remaking Mary Poppins, because frankly, how could you?
Exactly.
And the fact that it was a completely new and original story, and it was a different world. It was set 25 years later, so London's very different. It's set during the Great Depression, so it's kind of got a grayer, darker, sort of less storybook look the real world, I guess, has. But then, of course, we are still transported into these sort of fantastical, sort of magical Mary Poppins scene. So it was a good fun, because it was a good mixture of what I would call invisible visual effects, things like set extensions, and they build a partial set and we have to go in and put in the rest of it, or making Cherry Tree Lane look like it's a real street in a real road kind of thing, that sort of stuff that hopefully the audience aren't really aware of. And then, of course, tap dancing with penguins, which obviously they are. So it's a good mixture.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the tap dancing with penguins. That sequence, which everybody knows from the original film, does sort of make a reprisal in this new version. How was it coming to tackle that and the sort of doing almost traditional animation with more modern techniques, I guess?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the first thing to say about it was that we were, all of us were extremely keen that this would be like the sort of the 2D animation of the 1964 original. There's all these different periods of Disney animation, and that's commonly referred to as the Silver Age of Disney animation, that kind of 60s style. So
yeah.
Think of the first Mary Poppins, you think of 101 Dalmatians, there's a definite visual look to the way the characters are drawn. We didn't want Mary Poppins to end up in a Pixar movie, if that makes sense. Not that there's anything wrong with the movie is far from it, but no. it wasn't the aesthetic that we were looking for. And we were also very keen that and they are, every single character that you see in the movie, I mean, there's hundreds of different sort of animals and things like that. Every single one of them is hand-drawn with a pencil on a piece of paper by wow. a team of artists, many of whom we had to get back out of retirement because there isn't that sort of much stuff like that done in Hollywood anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, finding that many traditional animators must have been a bit of a trek.
It was a challenge, but then we had a big sort of plus because we're working on Mary Poppins, so yeah. you wouldn't want to do that. So that was certainly a positive. So that was the first thing. But then again, I think in 1964, the original team, sort of Walt Disney's team, were using the very, very latest technology that they had back then. So they were using, I'm going to sound extremely geeky now, so I apologize, but they were using things like multiplane cameras, which basically means when you photograph a piece of animation, you're sort of putting a camera above a table and you're photographing, you know, the characters on that flat surface. What multiplaning is, it allows you to put parallax in. So you basically have four sheets of glass at different distances from the camera. So you put your sky on the bottom one and you put your trees on the next one, and then you put your foreground on the one after that. And by moving them independently, you get a feeling of parallax. So imagine if you're looking out the car window and like the sort of the trees are whipping by super fast, but the clouds hardly move. Mm. That's basically parallax. And what they did back in the day was this incredibly elaborate mechanical camera to recreate that sort of effect. And that's really what's made Disney movies stand out at the time. Mm. Well, of course, we did a modern version of that, whereas they had four sheets of glass that they could use. We could have an infinite number. So we had some scenes where we'd have hand-drawn artwork, but we put it on different distances away from the camera, the virtual camera, if you would, which allowed us to do these incredibly complicated moves. Because again, in the original film, the cameras are pretty static when you look at it. It's like and everything is drawn around it. But of course, this is the 21st century, and so we're using steadicams and cranes and whooshing in and out. So that was an interesting challenge. So that was the sort of the first scene. But then there's a scene later where we bring the penguins in, where we're sort of dancing in a music hall. And now the director of this movie, Rob Marshall, is very familiar from films like Chicago, and he comes from a Broadway background. So if anyone's going to do a sort of a cartoon stage show, it's going to have to be Rob Marshall. So we need to make sure that we could give him absolute control over every single spotlight and everything that he wanted to have on his stage. We needed to recreate that so it would work within the animated world. So we ended up having to do something very cutting edge and create this a complete 3D version of a music hall, like a CG version of the music hall, all textured to look like it's been drawn. So it reacts to light and as if it's a piece of drawn artwork. But then we had to incorporate our 2D drawn penguins into this 3D world, which again is incredibly geeky and boring, and I won't go into detail, but it was ridiculously complicated in order to make a 2D character exist in the real, in a 3D world, so it could cast shadows and things like that. It was it was again incredibly geeky, but it all works out in the end. But it was a good technical challenge. So I think in reference to the first film, they were using the very latest technology to make the Jolly Holiday sequence. We've done exactly the same thing to make our sort of an animated sequence. So it really is a combination of literally back to the drawing board to the pencil and paper characters combined with very cutting edge CGI. And obviously the live actors filmed against a green screen and put in as well as the cherry on the cake.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a phenomenal amount of work, but I'm very much looking forward to seeing that scene properly. There is another set piece, which I think is slightly before that in the movie, which is the underwater
yes.
sequence, which there's a clip of the sort of opening of that, because it starts off in a bathroom and with a bathtub and stuff, and a sort of dolphin pops out and things. How was that to actually create? I mean, are you dealing with, are the actors on green screens on that, or are you dealing with water tanks and having to move people around, or are you?
It was an interesting challenge, because typically in a lot of modern visual effects films, thinking of, I know, superhero movies, stuff like that,
yeah,
it's very little now shot with the actors, and it goes quite quickly to digi-doubles or little CG versions, which are much easier to kind of manipulate and move around. But I think that the interesting challenge of this film, again, and it's kind of working with Rob Marshall, is he's very, very, very keen to have the real actors all on screen at the same time, all interacting with each other. So we really, throughout the movie, had to vary our shooting techniques and also just the way we would do the effects to accommodate that. So what we had to do, he didn't want to have kids and Emily Blunt sort of in water, because yes. Emily's singing, and frankly, the minute she opened her mouth to sing, she'd drown. So we did shoot that dry. And what we did, we ended up having to sort of go old school and had a very elaborate rig where every member of the cast was on a multi-harness sort of pick point wires, which were then run up to a sort of like a train track on the top of that was built on the top of the stage, so they could be pulled down the track. And then you had all these winches and cables being pulled in order to give them pitch and yaw. So we did that sort of to get all of the characters together. Then we would move our camera past that to give even more of a sense of movement and travel. But of course, the challenge was typically when you want to make somebody look a little bit floaty or underwater or kind of in space, you film a bit faster, you overcrank the camera. So when you play it back, it all looks a little bit slow motion. So we wanted to try and do that as well. But the challenge we had here was obviously that it's a musical and Emily Blunt is singing the whole time.
Yes.
What we did, we did overcrank the camera. We shot it at 32 frames per second, and normally it's about 24 frames per second that you film at, so that did make everything feel a little bit slower. And to get over the music, what we did, I got them to re-speed the music playback. So when you're hearing it on set, we had Emily singing incredibly fast. We pitch shifted it so it didn't sound like Alvin and the Chipmunks. But so she's not only is she kind of floating through the air and trying to look graceful, but she's also singing the song about, I don't know, 30% faster than it's supposed to. And it's a pretty speedy song. So it was really down to her performance that she was able to pull that off. And then when we played that back together at real time with the music at its proper frame rate, her and the kids, their arms just a little bit subtly floaty and just taking the edge off of it. But Emily's sort of bang on in lip sync.
Wow.
And then we created an astonishingly elaborate sort of half real, half fantastical CG world beneath them, which, I mean, it warrants repeat viewing because literally everything is moving. We have coral and an enemy, and they've all got, there's all little fish darting around inside them. Again, it's a musical, so we just needed to keep that sense of fluid motion throughout. I mean, yeah, it was a year of solid CG work to get that sequence to be where it is now.
Wow, that does sound fairly spectacular. I mean, being in those harnesses kind of be fun for the actors, but I'm told those harnesses are not the most comfortable things.
I've worn one and they're not comfortable at all. And the fact they had to look smiling and happy is a testimony to their ability to act. So.
Yes, particularly with the kids. I mean,
exactly. Yeah.
Was it all shot in the UK?
Yes, the film was shot primarily at Shepperton Studios just outside London. We did some filming at Pinewood Studios in their back lot at Pinewood in the Pinewood Gardens, which is familiar from films like Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Right.
Yeah, we got to sort of do things like close down the Mall in London and film outside Buckingham Palace and
nice.
Outside the Bank Junction, outside the Bank of England, and I got to go inside Big Ben and all that stuff. It was great.
Oh, wow.
Certainly having said, Mary Poppins does open quite a few doors, shall we say.
Yes, yeah, I'm sure. I was reading something about you had some issue with the weather, of sort of having to rebalance the weather, because being
yes.
England, the weather's never the quite iron, exactly iron, what you
yeah,
want.
The English weather wasn't kind, because we have a scene where the film starts that's supposed to be very grey and cloudy and overcast. And so when we came to shoot that, we were filming at Pinewood Gardens, which is the backlot of Pinewood Studios. And it was a glorious week of sunshine. I mean, we were eating in T-shirts and shorts, eating ice creams and stuff like that. It was so incredibly sunny.
Yeah.
So what we needed to do is we had to take that scene and literally replace every sky. So every clear, you see the kids running through the stormy environment with all these sort of leaves and wind and everything blowing. They're actually basically running through, and it was about, I don't know, 30 degrees as they were running through with bright blue sky behind them. So we had to take that and then replace every single sky in that sequence with like a gray cloudy sky. But then also do a lot of regrading work to take the highlights off of the characters as well. So to make it feel as though they were in that sort of, I know, gray overcast world. and then also add a lot of, you know, CG blowing leaves and just things like that to make it feel less tropical, which is certainly how it felt when we were filming it. But then ironically, at the end of the movie, when Mary Poppins has done her thing and everything's happy and sunny and wonderful again, we go back to the same park and there's a big sort of spring fair going, and they wanted the most gorgeous, beautiful day. And they were very smart in the schedule. They shot the overcast scene first early in the schedule, which of course ironically was sunny. Then when they came in the middle of the English summer to do this big glorious spring fair, it was horrible weather. I mean, it was terrible. So it was incredibly grey and cloudy, and every sky was exactly what we needed for the earlier part of the movie. So again, we found ourselves in a situation where we had to replace every single sky. So every blue, but instead of grey, we wanted sort of, you know, blue sky and fluffy white clouds. So we had to do a lot of that work and then add contrast and make it feel as though it was brighter, and paint out the lights that were in the back of the frame to try and make it look like the sun was shining. So yeah, it's, you know, there's advantages to shooting in England, obviously, but then that sometimes the weather doesn't help us.
Yes, yeah, very true. What do you think the audience would find is the most surprising bit of VFX that is in the film? You talked earlier about sort of invisible VFX, which is the sort of stuff that I love, you know, the when you can't really, you know, see that something actually had been altered. What is there anything particular that you think people would be quite shocked to realize that that was actually a VFX?
I mean, we've as I say, there's a lot of stuff around Cherry Tree Lane where they had a huge set built inside on H stage at Shepperton Studios, but it was all surrounded by a blue screen. So at some point, the buildings run out and yes. are replaced with CG. We look towards a park where, again, there's a railing there sort of that goes down the length of it. Behind that, it's all, you know, you see buildings and you see London and you see like tons and tons of trees and stuff. They've all been added in later. Yeah, there's a sequence when they're dancing on lampposts later in the movie. And again, it was a huge set, but we've just extended that sort of, again, just to make it sort of feel bigger and bigger and bigger. I mean, it's sort of typical. And then just looking at London, I think, is one of the things, because obviously the movie is set in 1934. And London doesn't look very much like 1934 anymore.
No.
There was a lot of work where you'd have these amazing buildings around sort of Bang Junction and in that sort of area in the city of London, where some of it just looks fantastic and you'll see it all in the movie. But then very quickly, it's like a modern skyscraper and an office building and something else. So there was a lot of work to be done cleaning that up. But I think my favorite sort of subtle one, which hopefully no one will see, and it really is a good combination of practical effects, which is sort of, you know, the guys who actually have to build things and blow them up and do all that sort of stuff on set. There's a sequence where Mary and Jack, the Lin-Manuel character, and the kids have to ride this sort of impossible bicycle where they're cycling and balanced on this ladder. And the way we did that was that the special effects team built this very complicated sort of stabilizers. Basically, the bicycle has the ladder going across sort of left to right, forming a kind of a T shape. So you have sort of kids balanced on the ladder, and you have Mary and Lin on the bicycle itself. And so the T shape, basically, that the ladder had these two metal pneumatic stabilizers on it with wheels that could pitch and yaw and allow Lin to cycle along and obviously the bicycle not to fall over. So that was an incredibly complicated rig. But of course, in digital effects, we had to remove the stabilizers and replace what would be behind it, which is fine if it's a simple background. But in many cases, the children are running behind it. So we had to, for the frames where we had to put back their legs in, we had to make little sort of CG legs of the children to kind of go back in and fill in the bits that are missing. So again, you'll never see it, but it was just, yeah, surprisingly complicated amount of work.
Yes, I love things like that. Just the amount of work you ends up going into things and you might not notice it. You know, I think they're...
Well, I hope, as a visual effects supervisor, I hope you don't notice any bit at all.
Yeah, well, yes, no, of course. Of course. I mean, as I say, there are certain points, like, you know, like with an Avengers movie, you know that that's a CGI Iron Man. But you know, I love the little subtle things which you don't see. I always find those the most fascinating. So my last two questions. First one would be, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
What am I watching? That's a good question. I don't actually get very much time to watch TV. And when I do, I tend to watch a lot of documentaries. So I've been watching the Ken Burns documentary about Vietnam, which I found fascinating.
Yes.
And I'm also a bit of a BBC Four arty documentary fan. So I've been watching a, sort of a few of those. But of course, I do work in visual effects. So I have been watching Doctor Who as well.
Yes. Did you see the Peter Jackson documentary? As a visual effects person, I would have thought that would have been quite interesting.
Yes, I have. The one about colorizing the World War One footage.
Yeah.
Yes. No, I have that at home in England. I have that saved on my Sky Q box. I haven't had the chance to see that yet.
Yes. That will be a good one to watch over Christmas. It's absolutely brilliant. And the last question will be, if you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, I know you mainly work in film, don't you? But if you had the opportunity to work on a TV show, past, present or future, which TV show would it be?
That's a very good question. I think if I could work on anything, I would go back and work on the original 1960s Thunderbird show. Because one of my heroes that I wrote my first fan letter to when I was 10 years old was Derek Meddings, who was the visual effects supervisor of that. And I just think I'd like to sort of play around with Thunderbird 1.
Very good choice. Very good choice. We've never had that one before. I'm very happy with that. Awesome. Well, Happy New Year.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
It's been lovely talking to you too. Hopefully when your next project comes out, we can have you on again and talk through whatever it is you're doing on that.
It would be my pleasure.
Awesome. Have a great day.
Thank you very much. And you.
Bye-bye. Cheers. Bye. That was the interview with VFX supervisor Matt Johnson on Mary Poppins Returns. The film, of course, is out in the cinemas now. Go and see it. Something I need to do myself. But yes, go out and see it. I'm sure it's great. It's been getting fabulous reviews. So go and watch it now. Here's some highlights for next week on TV. Highlights for next week on TV. And once again, I mean, it's January. There shouldn't be this much stuff in January. There never used to be. And suddenly, there's just piles of it. Most of it from streaming services, I think. Yeah. You know.
I've also learned a lot of the channels hold on to the September releases so they can skip all like the Thanksgiving breaks and the Christmas breaks.
Yes,
and
they do.
Just play it right through now till April and May and get the whole season out. So that's what I think with a couple of these on our list today. I think they've just held them until a good 8-10 weeks have gone past, and then when they play them out, they don't have to break them for Thanksgiving like they do in America.
That is very, very true. That's certainly with the CBS shows, they do that quite a lot, the big procedural shows they do, which is why Hawaii Five-O and things like that always come back early January. So joining Hawaii Five-O set, because it is interrelated to those shows, Magnum PI, 16th of January at 9 p.m. This is the remake of the classic 80s TV show, which I absolutely adored the original. It was one of those things that I used to sit and watch with my grandmother. So I was a huge fan of the original. I'm quite looking forward to seeing this remake. And some people are saying it's sacrilege. I will quite happily watch it. It's from the same people that did Hawaii Five-O. It actually sits in the same universe as Hawaii Five-O because they're both based in Hawaii. So it's in that NCIS LA, MacGyver, Hawaii Five-O, Magnum are all in one little contained universe. They have got crossovers coming up as well, I believe. Yeah, I'm quite looking forward to this. But yes, 16th of January at 9 p.m. Magnum PI on Sky One. So that's one to look out for. Have you seen the original?
No, I never saw the original. I've definitely put this down to record because I do like Hawaii Five-O, but I've never sort of cottoned onto the MacGyver stuff. But I thought I'd give Magnum PI a go.
That's the same with me. I didn't quite get round to the MacGyver thing, but they are all in this one shared universe because they all have the same producers, so they cross them over. This is the same with NCIS LA. That's they've done crossovers with that as well. That's on Sky One on the 16th of January. That's going to be followed by Ramesh Ranganathan show called Just Another Immigrant. So this sees him uproot his family and head to LA in a bid to make it in America. Quite like Ramesh. I think he's very funny. So that is a sort of documentary style thing, considering how, if you've ever seen his stand-up, how he talks about his family, and he's very, very funny. So 16th of January at 10 p.m. on Sky One, that's going to be. So that's going to be one to look out for. Russell Howard Hour back up for the second half of the second season of that. That's on 17th of January at 10 p.m. I love that show. It's basically Russell Howard's Good News, but on Sky One.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Second half of Riverdale, season three, that's coming back on the 17th of January as well. I still haven't quite finished the first half of season three yet because it got very, very, very silly and I really just couldn't deal with it. So I will go back to it at some point, but I haven't got around to it yet. Mm-hmm. Grace and Frankie, season four of that comes to Netflix on the 18th of January. I've not really watch this, but I know some people absolutely love it.
I love it. It's real sit back TV. Don't have to think. I can do some cooking or it could be in the background and it's always funny. And I'm definitely not the target audience, but I find it really entertaining. So
yes, I know that's got wide popularity. So Grace and Frankly back on the 18th of January. Also on the 18th of January, there's quite a bit actually. Star Trek Discovery also on Netflix. Second season of that lands on the 18th of January on Netflix, which I'm very much looking forward to. 18th of January over on Amazon Prime, Grand Tour Season 3, which will be the last of the sort of regular, not the last of the Grand Tour, but it will be the last of the regular ones with three guys in the big tent doing stuff to camera. After this season goes out, they're then going to do the Grand Tour, but there'll be specials much like the Top Gear specials used to be. So, and then they will be released throughout the year. So rather than doing like saving it for a single season, they have been renewed for a full season, but it's going to be a full season of specials rather than them in the big tent. That's Grand Tour Season 3 back on the 18th of January on Amazon Prime. Punisher also gets its second and potentially final season release on the 18th of January. Not officially being cancelled or renewed for a third season yet, but given that pretty much everything other than this and Jessica Jones haven't been cancelled, and the only reason these two haven't been cancelled is because they'd already filmed them. I mean, Punisher potentially is the one show out of that group that could stand on its own.
Oh no, mark my words, Dave, I bet you by February we've had a cancellation announcement.
It wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. I'm fully expecting it to be cancelled. If you were going to save one of them, that's the one that could separate itself from the rest of them more easily, I think, but I rather suspect that they're all going to get canned. So we'll have to see. But 18th of January on Netflix for Punisher Season 2. 19th of January on Netflix for Dynasty, part 2 of second season of that. So that's back. There's a new Canadian drama called Coroner that's coming to Universal. That's based on the Jenny Cooper series of novels by M.R. Hall. Stars Surinder Swan, who you were last seen with a slightly dubious haircut in Inhumans. that's called Coroner, which I'm assuming is about a coroner.
Potentially.
I guess. 21st of January at 9 p.m. for that one. And then Future Man, season 2 of that coming to Sci-Fi UK on the 22nd of January at 2 a.m. is the premiere for that, and then they run it again later on. So the first season of that, I haven't finished it yet, but was really, really good fun, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, so I need to get round to finishing the rest of that. Good sort of sci-fi comedy angle, yeah, but worth watching.
So much TV, Dave, so much.
So much, and it is not stopping this year. There is more coming next time, there is more coming in February. It is the ridiculous amount of things. You've got to be very picky about what you watch these days. So yes, that's it, unless you've got anything else you want to add in.
No, definitely. Obviously people do tweet me if they want to open a conversation about the BAFTAs, and before I'm on Geek Town again, I'm sure the Academy Award nominations also be released.
Yes.
We'll be talking about those and might put out a post about those too, so please do tweet me at Grey the Geek for a conversation if you want to discuss that.
Alright, we shall be back next week with Bex, assuming her voice hasn't given out or her legs haven't fallen off or whatever else she manages to do to damage herself recently. If you want to get in touch in the week in between, though, you can visit the website on geektown.co.uk throughout the week and see the latest air date info. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk, leave a message on the website post, find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at geektownuk. That is everything. I think we shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.